You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Welcome one, and a welcome to you all, to the greatest show of them all. It is the NFC East Mixtape Volume, not one, not two, not three, not four, not five.
Hey, LeBron.
Volume 157. You can listen to us on any one of SB Nation's NFC East blog podcast networks. You can also watch us on the Bleeding Green Nation YouTube channel or the Blogging the Boys YouTube channel. If you do any of those things, you will experience, in whatever fashion you decide to do so, the stylings of myself, Amar Joe Cho from Blogging the Boys, and the stylings of himself he has randomly gotten from Bleeding Green Nation. Speaking of styles, he is dressed for the week. Opening day is upon us. How about those Phils that lost the World Series a couple years back?
I'm going to the home opener. Shout out to my good friend Matt for hooking me up with the tickets. And former BTN radio host. I don't know if it's going to make it because there's rain in the forecast, but hopefully it works out. I'm excited to go at some point. Should be fun. Glad baseball is back.
Phillies open the season at home.
Against the Braves.
Oh, NL East
Thursday.
Okay, so opening day is a home game for the Phillies. I didn't know if off the top of my head, if Philly was at home or on the road to start the season. Okay. Wow. I feel like the Braves are probably if the Phillies are your Eagles, I think the Braves are maybe your Cowboys. Like, who's your baseball version of the Cowboys?
I guess. I mean, for some people, that's the Mets. I don't like the Mets, but I also think they're kind of just so, they're almost like, they get in their way so much.
Well, maybe they're like the Commanders.
Corollary. Yeah, they get in their way so much, it's kind of like they're not threatening, actually. Obviously, the Braves have been like incredibly good in the regular season, and then we just beat them in the playoffs. So I don't know. But I definitely hate, if we're talking about all sports, other teams I hate the most, Cowboys number one, probably, and then Celtics are probably right behind them at number two.
Interesting. It's I don't have an Eagles comp for my Astros because it's definitely not the Rangers. I wouldn't do that to DFW because the Eagles are my most hated team. But I don't know. Maybe the Mariners a little bit, just a teeny tiny bit. Yeah, there's a little bit of that kind of energy. In some
that's such like a, you know, they're so not threatening. They're like the least threatening team.
Well, I don't mean this way, but there's not really a team that's been threatening to the Astros. I mean, maybe the Rangers are that now. Obviously, they've lost two World Series, but I think Yankees fans would love to say that it's them. But I mean, it's not like it has to be a back and forth thing to be threatening and to be a rivalry. And, you know, we've discussed that many different times. And they're just,
I want to hear from the listeners which team they hate the most that isn't a football team.
Right. So if it isn't the Cowboys or Eagles or Commanders or Giants, who do you hate?
No football, no NFL teams, just like your other sports teams you hate the most and why.
While we're here, but even though we asked them for non-football teams, what is the non-NFC East NFL team you hate the most?
Comes and goes, I would say. The Saints for that team for a while.
Can I guess yours and you guess mine? I think that'd be fun.
But I mean, obviously, I think I have an obvious answer now. Okay, yours?
I think your answer now is the Niners.
Yeah.
Because of everything. So,
yeah, that wasn't always the case. And for the while
I could see the Saints being that for a while. Maybe the Cardinals have a chance to become that, especially like a little bit of a jump. Well, I mean, if we're talking like, you know, future potential, but
we'll see. It's a big leap. Yours? I don't know. That's a good question. I don't feel like you have a team because, you know, you hate it on the Broncos, so there's teams like that you kind of rip on. I don't think you necessarily definitely like hate them as a rivalry, though. You just think they're stupid, so you rip on them. There's a difference there.
That's true.
So I don't know what that team is.
Yeah, I don't really hate the Niners, even though they've owned the Cowboys, because it's just like I can't hate
if not a rivalry.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like what Joel Embiid said when
like being beat down. So like I really can't have a hatred as much as I just have an annoyance. There's a different emotion there. But I don't know. If I had to pick one non-NFC East team right now, in the like early 2010s, it was the Texans, because you know, at the time when I was in college at A&M, everybody was like, there were so many Houston people and they were just rubbing it in my face, like the TJ Yates thing. He has as many playoff wins as Tony Romo, and it was so annoying. But now I'm cool with the Texans. It might be the Packers. I mean
that makes the most sense.
Yeah. It might be the Packers, but
even with Aaron Rodgers gone, I know, like, I'm not saying that's invalid, but it's funny that a lot of that had to do with Aaron Rodgers, and he's not even there anymore. And it's still the case.
Kind of a hodgepodge start to the show. It is a hodgepodge kind of show. That was the word BLG used right before we started recording. The NFL's annual league meeting has been going on, one of them, in Orlando for the last couple of days. And there are some headlines and takeaways. Owners and coaches and executives and dignitaries have spoken for every NFL team. We obviously have some thoughts on everything that people associated with the NFC East have said. But in an overarching perspective, we also have some rules changes. I know you'll talk about these at BGN, and we've begun talking about them at BTB, certainly by the time this conversation is heard. The most notable one has to do with the kickoff. And this actually was partly led by John Fossil, Dallas Cowboys special teams coordinator, one of the presenters. The proposal was passed technically on a one-year basis, but the way these things always tend to go is they say that, but it's really forever. It's the XFL rule. So the place kicker hasn't moved, correct? Like there's no movement in terms of where the place kicker lined up. It's just now you're changing where the respective kickoff teams are lining up, and you're allowing time for the receiver or the catcher to field the ball before any kind of movement can take place.
Yeah, there's a good explanation of all this on SBNation.com. I put that on the BGN cover too, if you just want to go there and see it. But in any case, I like this because, and I think most people who either don't like this or don't care didn't watch the XFL, and I think that's fair. That's fine. Not everyone had to watch the XFL, but when I watched the XFL, and it's not like I watched every single game, but I saw I saw a touchdown return on one of these, and I was like, oh, that's kind of fun to see again. And in general, I liked it. I don't think it's like overly gimmicky. I think it makes sense. It's legitimately a way to make it a safer play, but still have entertainment value. So I actually think it's fine. And as I've said a number of times, I think to you or just in general on podcast over the years, what is the big deal with the NFL trying things for a year? Like, if you can make pass interference challengeable for a year just to placate Sean Payton, why can't you just try most things? It's silly to me that they won't allow the Eagles 4th-and-20 onside kick alternative proposal for at least a year. Just give it a year. And if it sucks, get rid of it. It's fine. Just try it.
I would offer the 4th-and-19, right, this year, whatever it was.
It's 4th-and-20.
But I mean, there was like a proposal or something that was like, it was not an even number, is what I'm saying. But either way, I'm with you. Like, I would totally try that. And not just the Sean Payton acquiescence that we saw, and this was a good change, but the Niners acquiescence, which is part of why you hate them, the emergency third quarterback thing.
I hate that change.
I know you don't. I'm just saying you hate them partly as a result of the game in which the change partly stemmed from. So yeah, like, we were willing to try that. That was a good thing. I like that idea. Excuse me. I like this idea as well, because I didn't want to lose the kickoff.
I don't agree with just eliminate it. I don't agree with that.
Yeah, like, call me, you know, a fan of pageantry or whatever, but like, I like the ceremonial part of it. I think
it's good for the pacing. I think it's good to kind of like slow, just like at a show, at a concert. You go to a concert, you don't just have a band play like just all of their hits all the time. Like,
or even it's not just like continuous music. There's a break after a song and, you know, whatever, this and that. So that's a concert's a good comp. So I agree. I don't know why they won't try the Eagles thing. I don't know why they won't try a lot of things, but this is good. This is a good change. I'm excited to see what it ultimately yields. I'm excited individually from a Cowboys slant about how John Fossil approaches this. I don't know how much Eagles fans know about John Fossil, although he did interview for that head coaching job when it went to Nick Sirianni, along with now Eagles offensive coordinator Kellen Moore. That's got to be really awkward for Kellen, by the way. I mean, I keep thinking about that, but whatever. Anyway,
former Cowboys quarterback Will Grier, now in Philly.
That's right. We're not talking about the Eagles here. This is, you know, the Cowboys.
Well, he's a former Cowboys quarterback.
Good, good. Ooh, sneaky. That was a nice little loophole. But John Fossil is elite at exploiting advantages like this. Like, if there is something Howie Roseman-like within the Cowboys, it is John Fossil. He will find the teeny tiny nooks and crevices or whatever that he can sort of work with. And so I'm excited to see how he does this, how he approaches this. They have Kevontae Turpin.
I was going to say, it speaks for him.
Yeah, I mean, it is a really interesting dynamic that we're going to see. The other notable changes that we saw, speaking of the emergency third quarterback, now a practice squad quarterback can be elevated an unlimited amount of times to the active game day roster for the purposes of serving as an emergency third quarterback. It'll be interesting to see who teams put there, because it'll clearly be, we think you're valuable enough to where you could be our starting quarterback in an emergency upon emergencies, but we don't think you're valuable enough to protect you and put you on our active roster all the time.
Count though as one of your two elevations that you get per week still.
I'm saying though,
there are situations where you might want to have those two for in case of injuries at other positions. So it's not an automatic that you just definitely put that third quarterback on the practice squad.
There's a lot of gymnastics that'll be associated with it. Also, on the subject of two, you can now place two players on injured reserve in initial roster cutdowns from 90 to 53. You can return two people from injured reserve in that process. So if you have two players who get hurt at training camp or preseason or whatever, you can put two players on IR as you trim down to 53 and return two at maximum. That used to just be
unlike one. Yeah, before where you had to have them on the original 53 man roster until waivers clear, the original round of waivers clear, and then you can put them on IR. So basically that was like the anti phantom IR thing, you know, like the stash IR. Now that is the stash.
Yeah,
you stash people in that.
You had to, you can stash too, because you had to carry whoever you wanted to stash initially.
Right.
So remember when you only used to be able to return one person from IR period? Like that was
that's insane.
That's so stupid. Like looking back on that.
What good reason is there for that?
It was really, really, really dumb. So we've come a long way. I think those were the notable changes. Unless I'm overlooking something. Is there anything else?
Well, the hip job tackle is obviously the bad. To me, it's not a real thing. Like people, it's just so subjective, and I think it's so dumb. And I don't. That's not an original take. I think everyone's on the same page for the most part with that. The players don't want it in there, so it's not just about as simple as like player safety. It's so subjective. It's not like a real thing. Was anyone using that term like 5 years ago, even a couple seasons ago? This isn't like a long term thing. It's just like something that people started to coin as a phrase. Because there were some high-profile injuries.
I think one of the biggest involved the Cowboys. It was Tony Pollard in the divisional loss 2 years ago now.
It's not a real thing.
Well, I mean, I think people's worry goes back to the Sean Payton pass interference thing, is people are worried about officials' ability to call this. I don't think...
It's so subjective.
I know. I don't think anybody disagrees. Like nobody has the take, I am fine with a dangerous tackle that hurts players. No, nobody thinks that. I think what everyone thinks is, okay, great. If we can get rid of dangerous tackles that are intentional and purposeful and therefore hurtful, we should. And if we can police that, then we can. But if we're just going to be policing all these things and we have no idea what's actually happening and it's all vague and it's all ambiguous and it's all subjective, it's just going to lead to horribly timed penalties that are going to swing games and swing contests one way or another.
It's just like, what's the teaching point here if you're going away from that? And also, what's a smaller person supposed to do, like a smaller defender supposed to do against like a big tight end or something? Like that's like physics, right? It's like you need the leverage to get that guy down. It just seems very dumb to me.
Also, if we're just going off of literal things that happen, the NFL moved the trade deadline back a week. So it is Tuesday.
That's so lame to me. It's just like,
well, I mean, I'm just telling you what happened.
No, I understand, but it's just like, that's just such a half measure. It's like very Cowboys of the NFL to just be like, we're just going to restructure $4 million of Dak Prescott's contract. It's just like, either do it or don't. What is this half measure thing? Like, if you're going to move it back a little bit more, so then it's actually significant. Like, what does 1 week really accomplish? I don't think it changes too much. I'm happy they did it. I think it should be later. There should be more of a clear buy or sell line for teams. I think that would be fun in both directions and ultimately good for teams, because I think right now, I think you would agree with this, teams tend to just stay pat. They just feel because teams are so delusional. They'll be like, we can still make a run. We're going to hold on to everyone. And it's dumb. And that results in a team, I guess, I don't know if this is the only reason for it, but like, you know, the Panthers holding on to Brian Burns when they could have gotten like this huge offer for him. Instead, they eventually just only get, you know, a second round pick and whatever for him. So, yeah, I think it'd be good to have a better defining line on that.
Two things on this. One, to your point, really, well, I guess the only one to your point, the NFL added a week to the regular season 3 years ago. So this is really just kind of catching up. You know what I'm saying? Like, this is like where it was roundabout, you know what I mean? Relative to the, you know, a 16 game regular season.
This is like the adjust for inflation.
Right. Yeah. So it really isn't anything new. I would like to see some research in, so I'm going to make up numbers, but something like, oh, research shows that week, I don't know, 14 is when, on like relatively speaking in history, is when the first team is mathematically eliminated from playoff contention. So like, if you found that to be true over the course, you know, of the last, I don't know, 50 years, whatever, and then you were to say, okay, because of this research, week 14 is our new trade deadline, or week 13, because you have to decide like, man, we have like a 5%, you know, chance to make the playoffs or whatever, blah, blah. So we really have to decide. Like, it should be based off of some history, not just like what feels right. You know what I mean?
Well, there's that, and there's also the context that people have done with like the different sports leagues and where where the deadline falls relative to like the percentage completed of their seasons. And obviously the NFL is like way ahead of those, and that also kind of lends to the idea that, okay, maybe you should push it back a bit. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I think part of the problem, I'm guessing, is they don't want it like on Thanksgiving, because that's, you know, it's not like, well, it's not ideal, I think, for them.
Speaking of, last thing, I guess, before or we head to, you know, the Cowboys and start the team-wide discussion, the NFL last year said, we promise we won't play on Christmas Day if it's on a Tuesday or Wednesday, and then said, oh, actually, we like totally lied because we only care about making money, and we recognize this is a big-time opportunity to make money. The Celtics be damned. So we're going to play on Christmas Day, even though it's on a Wednesday this year.
Yeah, that
and,
sucks.
And the tweet I saw from Catherine Fitzgerald, who doesn't, she's such an incredible beat writer for the Buffalo Bills at the Buffalo News. But the teams playing on Christmas will play on the Saturday leading into Wednesday Christmas. And she added that at this point, the NFL plans to rotate Christmas Day teams as the best games in best windows, rather than having something similar to Thanksgiving where the Lions and Cowboys always play. First of all, not the Lions and Cowboys' fault that they were visionaries a very long time ago. But second of all, this makes it seem like the NFL is going to make this an annual tradition, like regardless of day. So it's not just we're going to do it this year. It's we're going to do it all the time. And I think you agree we're probably going to get a noon game, an afternoon game, and a night game. And it'll be six different teams every single year.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that sucks. Do you hear Paul?
Paul, hey, buddy. Calm down. Can you see him?
No, I can't.
Wait. Can...
I can, there he is. I can now see Paul in the most overrated safety of all time.
Oh, my gosh. That's... untrue. That's not a picture of Troy Polamalu.
So wow, what a recovery. Wow.
Sorry. Yeah, I mean, it sucks. I don't think anyone wants that, right? I mean, obviously you and I are biased. It sucks because we'd have to cover it, and that's not, and I've, look, you know, again, and we're grateful we get to do this job, to be clear, but like, you know, you have to work Thanksgiving every year. That sucks for you every single year. At least I think so. I don't want to have to work Thanksgiving every single year. I don't think that's fun. I don't think that's cool. I don't think it's necessary. And I know the Christmas thing wouldn't be one team every year, but like having, I worked it this past year. I worked it, I think, the 2017 season. So, you know, already twice in the span of whatever many years. It's just like, let's just chill out. It's no one's asking for it. It's the NBA, or yeah, it's totally the NBA's thing. If you want to have a game, like if you want to do it with the weekend thing, fine. You know, if like they did last year, right? Or the Monday thing, like if it's naturally around the weekend, a Saturday, Sunday, Monday, I'm fine with that. I think that's okay to do, make some sense. But
yeah,
if
like
you're forcing it into a Wednesday game, that's just stupid. And if it's very transparently a money grab.
If it falls on a normal NFL day, and I'll even put Saturdays in the month of December, right, because that's become a common thing. But if it falls on a Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, or Monday, you got to leave, you know, that's fine, right? That's the shake. But that's literally more than half of the time.
Yeah. Because
that's four of the 7 days.
Exactly.
But
there's already enough Christmas opportunities. Stop.
Yeah. Like, you know, so, but if it falls on a Tuesday, Wednesday, or Friday, you got to leave it alone, man. Like, just be cool. By the way, I just saw a tweet from Adam Schefter. It will be two games that the NFL will have. So not three. And also to have them go from a Saturday to a Wednesday. So now you're not only like having them do something reckless and dangerous while caring about player safety with mm-hmm. the hip drop stuff, which everybody's pointed out, But so you're also contaminating 2 weeks because you're contaminating the Saturday game that you have to go to from Sunday and now the Wednesday game. So it's more than just like the Thursday night football where you're contaminating the second game. You know what I'm saying? So it's just, and these are important games. I mean, beyond the obvious, which is like player health. I mean, it's just, I mean, but they don't care and everybody will watch and it's frustrating.
Yeah, it's like you said, they're whatever important games and you have that, like you're saying, the mini bye. Now you're giving a team a mini bye. That could be a massive advantage or disadvantage to the other team having to play them, depending on how they schedule it out. So, yep, unnecessary and dumb.
Okay, let's talk about the Dallas Cowboys, even though it's a whole bunch of nothing. Nothing, literally nothing.
They haven't signed anyone else?
Nothing, dude.
There's no rumor? Did they work anyone out? Anyone visiting?
Nope.
I saw the big Cowboys thing I saw was Jerry Jones like talking and he was like scribbling on the paper and it's just like a bunch of nothing.
I don't want to tell anybody how to have a good time or joke or meme or anything like this, but my radio co-host does this. Like when he's on the radio, he just scribbles. Like it's just, I don't know if it's like a nervous habit or whatever, but like
I don't think it means anything, but, but it does look kind of funny.
It was funny in the context, but like everybody, there were some people who were taking it seriously, who were like, oh my gosh, he's taking notes or whatever. But he offered. I mean,
it's really sitting on a tee, like Cowboys offseason plans or whatever.
It's Cowboys draft strategy right now.
It's funny because it's like, you know, it's a billionaire. So it's a guy like ostensibly you're like, oh, this guy, you know, is like he thinks at a different level or whatever. But he's just like scribbling like on a piece of paper. It's just very funny.
Big time updates, I guess, that we've gotten from Jerry and McCarthy in terms of speaking at the owners meetings. Jerry believes the run defense is improved, even though they've lost a lot of people, but because DeMarvion Overshown will be back and Eric Kendricks is here. So the Overshown thing is so reckless to place all this pressure on a dude who's technically never played in the NFL. A third round pick. Granted, he looked great in training camp in the preseason.
Sure, but like,
no. I mean, I'm just telling both sides of the story. Three is, you know, coming off injury, right? So like that's a big thing in and of itself. And four, you know, the whole thing with Dan Quinn leaving was we want to get rid of these converted safeties as linebackers. We need some legitimate linebackers. He was a safety in college. Like he fits that mold too. So like, he's not even what you are saying that you want moving forward. So that's the first thing. Jerry also said that the Cowboys cannot afford to risk Tyron Smith hitting the contract incentives in the deal that the New York Jets gave him. Now, we covered this a lot at BTB. Did you see anything about this?
No.
So Tyron's base salary is $6.5 million this year. And the likely to be earned incentives that his deal has with the Jets take him up to $12.25 million. So his cap number for the Jets this year is $12.25 million. That's it. Now, and we wrote this in the article, he has some not likely to be earned incentives in his deal as well that he could hit, but those do not count against your cap this year. They count against the Jets cap next year if he hits them, obviously, whichever ones he ultimately winds up hitting. Those are for a value of $6.5 million. And so I don't know if they think that we're just this dumb, that we don't have access to this information. You know what I'm saying? Like, you're telling me that Tyron Smith, who I completely understand the injury risk on and everything, but who played when he did last year, which was 13 games, like the best left tackle in the NFL. That's how he was graded by PFF. You couldn't carry a $12.25 million cap charge for that. You know, forget the all in a general year in which you are trying to compete and win a Super Bowl. It's so stupid. And so that's one of the headlines. I'm kind of giving you everything to react to here. Mike McCarthy said on.
Stop down on Tyron just real quick. Quick thing I have to say about that. It's like it's at such an important position, too. It's not like at a, you know, a luxury position where you can kind of afford, like maybe like let's say running back where you might want to go cheaper in general. It's like left tackle. It's the second most highest paid position in the NFL. It's like, well, maybe if there's a spot to take that kind of risk, maybe that's the spot to do it.
And on top of that, a player who you got on the cheap for a very long time, you know what I'm saying? Who was like severely undercompensated. I'm not trying to say Tyron hasn't made a lot of money, but like relative to like performance was, undercompensated.
Inarguably, I was pissed when they signed him to that extension. I was like, what the hell is this? This is like Atlanta Braves Shout out to my good friends Jack Fritz and James Seltzer, who joke that like the Braves like bring like guns to the negotiation of their players and like hold it to their players' heads. Maybe a little too morbid, but like point being, like they just like threaten their players to sign these insanely under market deals.
So severely undercompensated, homegrown player will be in the Ring of Honor, will be in the Hall of Fame. Like if there were ever a dude to make exception for exception for exception for, it would be him. So we had that come out on Tuesday. Mike McCarthy, on Monday, he was on NFL Live with Adam Schefter, and man, good to Mike McCarthy. He's a better person than I think you and I are. He towed the company line. He said he's not worried about the lack of free agency moves. He even said he's used to it. Obviously, as the head coach of the Packers for forever, they notoriously don't do this, and that God, we so badly want to beat them because they live rent-free in their minds. Once again, the team I hate the most outside the NFC East for obvious reasons. Especially because now they're contaminating the Cowboys by in terms of their way of thinking. But beyond that, McCarthy said from the breakfast table on Tuesday that both Mozzie Smith and Luke Schoonmaker had off-season shoulder surgeries. So now you're talking about a world where your top 100 picks from last year in a draft class that was already very not good, they are all coming back from some sort of surgery, either before or after their rookie season, obviously Overshawn's before. And you're counting on them to a significant degree. The whole thing reeks to high hell. I'm so pissed. I hate everything.
I did, you know, see the clip of Schefter interviewing McCarthy. You referenced that, right? Yeah, and it was kind of funny because Schefter even pushes back on it because McCarthy's like, oh, you know, like, hey, we're good, you know. We don't need to sign anyone right now. We're making, you know, the improvements we have internally are great. And Adam Schefter is like, so that's your message to Cowboys fans? Like, are you sure? Like, are you sure you want to go with that? Because they're probably not going to be too thrilled about that. And in fairness, McCarthy did talk about how the offseason is long. And I've said that. There's a lot of chances to still add players. But while that is true, more than one thing can be true. And the Cowboys certainly, I think, missed a big window where they could have added even more players. Still at a reasonable rate. So that's kind of what we've been saying for the past so many episodes here since free agency began, really. And it still rings true because they haven't done anything.
So basically, everything is really bad. And I will say, this is a weird way to put it, but I'm proud of Cowboys fans. Like, and I think whenever times are bad with the Eagles, I think you would agree with this. Like, you have your homers no matter what, right? Like, you have people that are, oh, the team is right. You don't know. Like, you know, you don't know what they're planning. Like, you're not going to trust the guys who are there every day. But you know what I mean? Like, you have that stuff no matter what. But most people are kind of have had their eyes opened a little bit this offseason. And I don't even think at this point it was the way the season ended. I think people are almost willing to forgive that, right? Like, I think people are almost willing to say, you know what, dude, it sucked. I was really mad, but it's sports. Sometimes you just lose. I think what's really, really, really pushed people is that they do not seem to care about fixing that. There was like a level of trust that, okay, you know what, we're going to give you this mulligan, but, you know, get to work and fix it. And that they haven't done that has really upset a lot of people. And a topic that a lot of people are kind of coming around towards is how much the Cowboys spend. And I mean actual cash spend, not salary cap space. There was a great thread on Twitter from Joey Ikes, who does a podcast for us at BTB, longtime BTBer. And there was a great article on our site by the legendary OCC, who I know you love and have loved forever. I don't know if you read this article, but OCC wrote about the Cowboys cash spending basically from 2013 till now. So almost the dawn of the new CBA. There are some exceptions there. He couldn't find information for 2020. Obviously, that's a really unique year. But looking at just the last 3 years, which I think is kind of notable because the Cowboys love to hang their hats on, you know, we've won 12 games in a row each the last 3 years, blah, blah, blah. It's been the little run they've had under Mike McCarthy. In those 3 years, where do you think the Cowboys rank in terms of total cash spending across the entire NFL?
10th.
The Eagles rank 10th. They have spent $655.2 million.
Oh.
Okay. The Giants rank 15th. They spent $636.9 million. NFL average is $627.4 million. The Commanders, this is mostly the cheap Dan Snyder era, by the way. The Commanders have spent $618.4 million. All right, that's 19th. The Cowboys are down at 30th. They have spent $534.3 million over the last
America's team, baby.
So forgetting the decimal.
The most valuable sports franchise in the world.
Forgetting the decimal, just rounding. Dallas at 534, Washington at 618, NFL average at 627. the Giants at 636, over 100 million more. Philly at 655. You're talking about these teams that are finding ways and manipulating the salary cap to spend more money in the name of winning. Now, in the last 3 years, have the Eagles or Giants or Commanders won a Super Bowl? No. Have any of them won more games than the Cowboys? I don't think that the Eagles have in the last 3 years, but it might be very close.
It's pretty close.
Yeah, whatever. But you get my point. Have they been better than the Cowboys or whatever? Like, you, again, I'm not here to debate the specifics of this.
Well, that's not the standard. It's not just about being better than your divisional.
I know. Opponents. But what I'm here to say is, like, even if they haven't, even if they'd all been, like, unbelievably worse, they tried really hard. You know what I mean? They tried as hard as they possibly could to be as good as they possibly could. And that the Cowboys are this beyond this. This goes back to the point I made to you last week. If you are truly that, you know, poor in terms of, not literally, but that poor in terms of spending, and you're this good in terms of success by your own metrics, then maybe pay the people at the very least who are responsible for you being this good, like your quarterback and your head coach in this particular era. It's ridiculous, dude. It's so frustrating. And I do think a lot of people are upset with them and now believe more than ever that they view this, the Joneses, as a business and as a part of their portfolio, not as something they're trying to capitalize on from a success standpoint.
Rank the NFC East owners.
I don't give Jeffrey Lurie a lot of credit when it comes to the Eagles. Like, I give Howie Roseman all the credit. So, like, I'm not trying to take away from Jeffrey Lurie.
Well,
but
if you want to say that, though, but, like, Jeffrey Lurie has, like, famously stuck by him through
thick
and
thin,
and in times where he honestly probably shouldn't have, but it did work out. So
I would give
it's tough to separate.
I would give John Mara a lot more credit than I think you would, because I
rank him. Like, I'm asking you to rank him.
I'm gonna go John Mara
number one.
Yeah,
what the hell?
I think he really cares. I think Jeffrey Lurie has,
but he's clueless. They're clearly clueless.
Well, but he's also willing to empower people, and that sometimes are the wrong people.
This is an awful ranking. Their Super Bowls are so fluky, dude. Like, it's not like this.
You asked for my opinion, so I'm going John Mara.
Have a better opinion.
I'm going Jeffrey Lurie, and then I'm going to go Jerry Jones, just because, you know, Josh Harris is so new. I can't give him, you know, above Jerry.
I would say Lurie number one. And part of what you said there, the cash spending thing, if you shrink that window, I don't know how long of a window was that you said, how many years?
This is just 2021, but I do think I'll send it to you. I think you would enjoy this because Philly has been at the top in the entire data set that Lars.
There's a good window. I forget exactly when it is where, like, the Eagles are definitely like one or two. They're very high up there. And that also fits the kind of what the Eagles like to do with how they handle the salary cap. Like, they're willing to restructure so many contracts and take on, you know, dead money and stuff, because Lurie is willing to pay that money up front, like signing bonus, not just where the Cowboys, by contrast, are more interested in having it as the players earn it through a base salary, which is, like, you know, it's not totally invalid, or there's pros and cons to everything. It's not like there's one right way to do it, but if you're going to be aggressive with it and you're going to try to get an edge with it, it's kind of like how the Eagles have done it anyway.
So this is from the article, and again, everyone should read it. OCC wrote it at BTB. I sent it to you on Slack, BLG. This is directly from it. The Cowboys ranked just 25th over the four-year period from 2013 through 2016, and that's despite signing Tony Romo to a then-franchise record $108 million contract extension in 2013 that made him the fifth highest-paid player in the NFL at the time. Here's your line. The Eagles rank number one over the period. Mm-hmm. This is 13 through 16, with $613.9 million in cash spin. Yep. A cool $22 million more per season than the Cowboys. So your direct adversary, your direct challenger, the biggest threat to you within the division is spending $22 million more per season. I don't know what the NFL salary cap was off the top of my head in this window on average, but call it, I don't know, $110 million. Although I don't know what it was, but I mean, but either way, that's a significant percentage of the salary cap that they're finding a way to spend more. This is, the Cowboys view this as a budgeting tool versus teams like the Eagles, and I would put the Browns there, I would put the Vikings there. They view it as a weapon to manipulate and take advantage of. Exactly. And back to Joey's Twitter thread, which I know he was on the ticket talking about on Tuesday. This was more tinfoil hat theory, but he talked about how the Cowboys are just a part of the Joneses' business portfolio, and they're probably not even the Joneses' most profitable business, and how when Jerry bought the Cowboys in the obviously late 80s, early 90s, that he sunk all of his, like, business equity into the team. And so from a business standpoint, in order to succeed, in order to have a positive return on investment, the Cowboys had to succeed, right? Like, the Cowboys had to have success for him to have business success. And so at the time, there was a higher level of energy and a higher level of devotion, or whatever you want to call it. And they obviously had success. And that was able to be parlayed into this and this and this and more and more and more and more. And maybe other NFL owners are in buildings or in situations like that. I don't know Jeffrey Lurie's financial status, but, you know, there's definitely an NFL owner who has just the team that they own. They don't have all these other subsidiary sort of things like Jerry or Arthur Blank or Stan Kroenke or whatever the case may be. So it can just exist because, especially the Cowboys, they're this organism that sort of is now this like self-living, self-governing thing that just is so insulated by its brand and the NFL's brand that you don't have to spend. Like, you can argue, and OCC did this in the article, and I'll let you react and we can move on after this. Every dollar, if you look at it as a business, spent on the Cowboys is spent way shorter than it is for every other NFL team. Right? Like, you think about like a dollar that the Jaguars would spend, their ownership, it goes so much farther because of what they're trying to grow. You can almost argue that spending money is losing money from a business standpoint for the Cowboys because their brand is so large relative to the entire field.
Yo, go Lurie number one. Go Josh Harris number two, just by virtue of...
Oh my gosh.
By virtue of he hasn't proved yet to be terrible. I mean, this Jerry Jones stuff, I know the success has been there on field, but in terms of like owner giving you the edge, I think I have a hard time saying second right now, especially after all the stuff you're saying. I'll put him three, and I'll put the... So that it's not... I get what you're saying with the Mara. You think he cares like a fan, and that's nice and all, but also I think they're clueless. And also, I think part of the biggest problem with the Giants, or a problem with them, might not be the biggest problem, is the split ownership. I think that kind of causes not a cohesive vision always. And I think that's kind of what went down like Eli late career, was that there was some desire to move on from him, from maybe like the Tisch side, I think it was, but then the Mara side wanted to hold on to him. So there's, I think that rare kind of thing where they have the double ownership thing kind of works against them. And they've been so inept. They've been literally the worst team or one of the worst teams since like 2017. So I'm going to rank them towards the bottom down there. And their Super Bowls are fluky. So boom. We should probably take a break because we haven't even gotten to the Eagles.
I'm sorry, but 1 second, and I'm going to have to try to write about this in parallel to us talking here. Ian Rappaport just tweeted right now.
Cowboys did something?
No. This is his tweet verbatim. The Cowboys and QB Dak Prescott have a mutual understanding of his contract situation, sources say. With no offers from Dallas, despite him being in a contract year, owner Jerry Jones said, "We are where we are, locked and loaded for this year." No indication that a deal is
coming. Dak's going to be a free agent, baby.
I'm curious.
He is. I mean, literally, no, he is.
I'm not. I'm curious.
You can't tag him.
I know. My question is, how does this make you feel? Because if you're happy, then that's an acknowledgement that Dak is very good.
Well, I think he's an idiot if he doesn't test the market. So, I mean, I think it's great if he tests the market, because then either he gets way too much money from the Cowboys or he leaves. And the Cowboys... I mean, I'll take quarterback X over like Dak in terms of there's a lot of room to go down for sure. So I think it's the worst case scenario for the Cowboys. So that's why I'm happy about it. How do you feel about it?
So
you're trying to say, if you think this is bad news, then you think he's good. It's like, we got you thing.
You very obviously do. No,
that's not the point, though. The point is it's bad news for the Cowboys. And that's the biggest deal of it.
It's bad news because he's good. So you think Dak is good. That's fine.
It's bad news because they're going to lose him or they're going to overpay him. And so, they're going to overpay him means that he is
my thing.
Obviously good to a point, but not good enough ultimately.
This is where like this ultimately all boils down to, or what it all boils down to. He is now less than a year from true open market free agency. Right. Like he has
unparalleled, I would say,
like that has not existed, presuming, God willing, full health for him throughout the season, because even the quarterbacks that have hit it have done so with like some sort of qualifier, like Kirk this offseason, Peyton, obviously, in 2012. You know, Kirk wasn't viewed, I think you would agree, the way Dak would be viewed in the offseason, the time he did hit free agency when he was healthy, when he signed with Minnesota. So like in the dawn of like quarterback stupid money, nobody has ever been in this situation. I guess Tom Brady kind of was in 2020 when he joined the Bucs. But even then, he was viewed as a little old and nobody. Again, it was unique in and of itself. That you would risk this happening is so unfathomably dumb. I mean, so unbelievably dumb. And that you don't understand that in order to prevent this, you have to offer something that is worth turning down that golden ticket for Dak. You know what I'm saying? That has to be the offer. Whether you think that's fair or not, that's the position you put yourself in. You know what I'm saying? And so they have done this. And now they're going to risk, I don't care how good you think Dak is, not you specifically, BLG, but anybody, but he is undeniably a top flight quarterback in the NFL. Top 10, top 7, top, again, define it how you want. If you were to ever trade him, which you can't because he has a no trade clause, mm-hmm. but if you were, you would fetch what? 3 first round picks? Like, you know, like we don't have to sit here and debate the specifics mm-hmm. of that, but like you would get a lot. And now you are on the verge of watching him not only leave your team and therefore leave you unqualified at the most important position in the game, but literally leave a cool. You'll get a 2026 third round compensatory pick because we damn know that you won't sign anybody to balance it out yourselves on your side of free agency. So this has the potential to be the most completely botched free agency quarterback situation in modern NFL history. We're getting closer and closer and closer to that.
And there's no viable backup plan, right? There's nothing. I mean, because, you know, Trey Lance will be a free agent after this year, right? Obviously, Cooper Rush is not the answer. I mean, it'll be, I think, you know, hearing that and the draft coming up, I don't think the Cowboys are going to like trade up to number 3 or something like crazy. But, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what they do in the draft at quarterback. Because if that's the case, they have to hedge their bet, it feels like, in some regard, unless they're just going to roll really with what they have. But... yeah, it's really dumb in terms of speaking, giving your team an edge. I mean, that's not giving your team an edge by trying to wait. This is the best case scenario for the Cowboys. Obviously, this goes without saying. They win the Super Bowl and it's like the Joe Flacco thing. Or you just pay him. Doesn't matter. Like just literally pay him literally any amount he wants. And even if it's like a terrible contract in theory, who cares? You just won the Super Bowl. That's the only way this works out. That's the only situation. That's a good situation for the Cowboys.
I hate everything, and I'm going to have to write an article while Brandon's telling me about how the Eagles are doing things successfully. So let's take a break and then get to that.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Go ahead. I don't even care anymore. Baseball season starts in 2 days. I'm good.
It's off season is beating you down. Eagles stuff. Well, Quez Watkins isn't back. That's cool. We like that. He's gone. Eagles signed Paris Campbell from the Giants. He was bad last year and was like one of their 70 slot receivers they had on their roster. He'll compete for that Quez Watkins spot along with Devontae Parker. Ostensibly, I think the real goal is to try to get someone in the draft who can beat out both of those guys and be a nice little third option when it comes to the receiver group behind AJ Brown and Devontae Smith. And also just, this is something I don't want to jinx here, but I've been thinking about it. Like AJ Brown and Devontae Smith has stayed remarkably healthy and it makes sense. They're younger players. They haven't had long injury histories, but over the past 2 years, like they've barely missed any time. I think Devontae wouldn't have even missed the one game he did last year if it weren't for it being like kind of a meaningless week 18 game. Obviously AJ missed the playoff game. So more than zero games missed, but still very few games missed. So they definitely kind of, I think, need to take a little bit more of an investment in receiver, especially the draft, I think being the way to go there after what they've already added. Not much else. They signed a nickel cornerback from the Raiders. His name is Tyler Hall. He might be their nickel cornerback this year. He might not. There isn't a lot of super big, juicy headlines. Even out of Howie Roseman, I would say some of the big takeaways from him speaking were that they felt like they missed the swagger. So that's obviously factoring into the CJGJ contract, which I think I saw was only like $10 million guaranteed. So not too much of a risk there. They also talked about how Saquon's going to be a big part of the plans. And I think that's maybe somewhat noteworthy in terms of, by the way, today's March 26th, Saquon Barkley. Wait, is he wearing 26 for the Eagles? I think so. Yeah, I think
that's a you question.
I think he's keeping his number. Yeah, he said he considered 8, I believe, but that's actually what CJGJ is going with because of Kobe, even though he could have gone 23. Yeah, Saquon's 26. The messaging with Saquon is very much that, you know, he's running back 1, which is not how the Eagles have handled things in for a while now, honestly, probably since Shady, where they're like, yeah, you know.
DeMarco disrespect. Oh, my gosh.
Well, I mean, true, but okay. DeMarco Murray, I guess. But that's not even true, though, because they had they signed Ryan Matthews,
that's
too.
Right, that's
and they had both of those guys there. And obviously, DeMarco sucked as well. So that wasn't even the case. It was really going back to the days of Shady. And obviously, too, talking more about when Howie Roseman was actually in charge of the team, which he was not in 2015. So there's been a lot of talk about Saquon and how, you know, they're really going to, I think, ride him. And how the running back thing, Howie kind of talked about, he thinks running backs have become a little bit undervalued. It's gone a little bit too far in the running backs don't matter thing. And lastly, on this, Sirianni, one of the bigger things from his press conference was that he compared Saquon to the A.J. Brown acquisition in that they definitely want to, like, design the offense in no small part to feature him and be a big weapon in the offense. He's not just a running back. He's a weapon. He can pass protect. He can catch the ball. He can do everything. He can. And I was talking about this on a show, I guess it on this week, the mythical offseason fantasy football Twitter loves this thing. Oh, this running back is lining up in the slot. Oh, no, well, watch out. It's going to revolutionize that Tony Pollard in the slot. Oh, my gosh. How our team's going to defend. Never happens. Never actually manifests anything meaningful in the regular season. Could that be different with the Eagles? We'll see with your boy Kellen Moore in charge now, in charge, quote unquote. Dick Sirianni keeps saying it's a meshing of the systems. But I think that's all that's going on in Eagles land. Other than, yes, they also added Will Greer, as we talked about earlier, who is very much here to, I think, just be a camp arm slash help some of the other quarterbacks translate this, whatever schematic or the terms, the language from the Cowboys parlance to maybe to what is going to be now the Eagles new setup. So there you go.
So a couple things here. The Roger Goodell downplayed health. I just saw this right now. So when talking about playing on Christmas, that's hilarious. But the thing I was going to get to, Packers president Mark Murphy told reporters that the NFL is deciding between them and the Browns to play the Eagles in Brazil in week one. You mentioned that game is on Peacock. So we know the Eagles are playing in Brazil week one.
It's
that
on
is
Peacock, but that's technically on NBC locally.
Okay, but that's technically, speaking of locally, a home game for the Eagles, right, that they're giving up?
Yes.
Okay. So that's one of the 9, because the NFC gets 9 this year. One of the 9 home games, it's being played in Brazil. It's on Peacock for international audience, or not international, for the non-local audience. I don't know where it is for the international audience, except for Brazil. But Packers or Browns, who would you rather play in week one?
That's a good question. I guess I don't really care. I guess the Browns, in terms of, like, I'm trying to think strategically what's the best. Versus, I guess, the Browns, because in theory, Deshaun Watson could stink so bad that he gets, like, benched at some point. Don't you think that's on the table for this season? Like, that's plausible. It's possible that they go to Jameis or Tyler Huntley or DTR at some point, that Deshaun Watson is so bad. I feel like that's on the table by the end of the season. So I'd rather them play him early in the year, assuming he is going to be bad again. So. Yeah, although you could say it could be better to face them later in the year with the thought that you're hoping they're more banged up and, like, maybe Myles Garrett misses a game or something. But I'll say that the Browns.
I think so, too. I'd rather play the Browns with Deshaun. So I don't know when the Cowboys are going to draw them, but, you know, because the NFC East plays the NFC North this year.
Also, maybe there's a little bit, like, of a hangover there because the Browns had, like, this, like, magical ride until, you know, they lost to the Texans for a little bit. So maybe they're thinking, like, they're a little bit better than they are, like, they're hot stuff, and there's, like, a reality check for them. I could see that kind of happening, whereas the Packers, I think, kind of have this Packers would be underdogs in that game, I'm guessing, and they kind of have this, like, house money young team feel, ready to take a step forward. I think the Packers are a little bit scarier in a week one scenario.
I agree. They're still kind of not I don't know that the Packers are going to be like a hot Super Bowl pick. I think they'll be like a hot NFC North pick, but
they're a hot Super Bowl bet pick in terms of like the odd value pick. Sorry,
I'm talking like the week one pregame shows. You know, no one's going to be picking when they're like, okay, Brandon, give us your Super Bowl 59 pick. You know, no one's going to be like, oh, the Packers, whatever. Because people are still going to say like the Lions. Like the Lions are going to be one of those picks again. You know what I'm saying? But so. I don't want the Packers in that moment. Mm-hmm. I'm way afraid of them. But so beyond that, are we done with the Eagles? Because I don't know, but I want to make sure we hit everything.
The Will Greer thing, if I have that right, like he was going to be the quarterback three, presumably, until they traded for Trey Lance, and then it was clear he wasn't, and then he had that awesome third preseason game.
That was the final preseason game. I can't believe we hadn't talked about this, but he had the final preseason game, and it was like the day after they traded for Trey Lance.
So it was kind of cool for him that he got like one last shot.
And I don't know if you knew this, on the subject of offensive play caller, Dak was the offensive play caller for that game. So it was like
Dak, Eagles offensive coordinator in 2044.
Yeah, that was the funny thing I thought about this was that Dak was Will Greer's offensive coordinator. And now Kellen Moore
is stealing his place.
It was a real big bummer when Greer didn't make the Cowboys roster, just because he was really well liked. And a lot of people thought after the 21-22 season that he had a chance last year to be Cooper Rush out for the backup job. But then Cooper Rush had the run he had, and it was like, oh, well, you know. But he's a good dude, cool guy, easy to root for. He bounced around last year after the Cowboys moved on.
Yeah.
And so I will say it is interesting how Kellen Moore has brought in Doug Nussmeier and now Will Greer. I know I'm missing somebody else.
There's another staff member. It's not like a position coach. I think it's a little bit lower, but there's another guy, from the Kellen Moore or two from the Kellen Moore, the Cowboys, former Cowboys guys.
So it's almost like we really want you to be Dak, Jalen. That's just go be Dak, please. That's go what we all are rooting for. Anything else on the Eagles?
No, I think that's it for now. We're going to hear from Jeffrey Lurie tonight, as after we're recording this podcast on Tuesday around 2:00 Eastern. So we'll see what he says, but you can stay tuned to BGN Radio for that. Giants still buzz. They could take a quarterback, trade up for a quarterback. JJ McCarthy has been connected not only to them, but also the Commanders, who we can get to obviously last, but that's kind of interesting. I saw our good friend Ed Valentine did a mock draft where he does like a mock draft a week for Big Blue View. And they're not done as just, you know, like, here's what I would do. He does them as like, here's a potential option, like a thought experiment that we should explore. So he did that with JJ McCarthy this week, and not popular. From what I'm gathering with Giants fans, that post has 685 comments, RJ. So there's clearly a big heated discussion going on in the comments there on Big Blue View. The other big thing, I guess, from them is that
you can do this.
Brian Daboll. I almost said Dan Quinn. Brian Daboll and both, I think the Maras, like John Mara too, basically pretty much they definitively said Daniel Jones is their starting quarterback, which isn't surprising to you or me, but they could have left it a little bit more open-ended and they didn't. So, and I think that's true. Even if they do draft a quarterback, I still think they're going to give Daniel Jones one last chance because he's there anyway, and they don't necessarily feel the need to force a rookie in right away. But yeah, that's all that's going on, I think, in Giants land.
Yeah. What happens to them in the draft is obviously the story of their entire season, but nothing crazy, nothing wild. You did have something you wanted to get to on the Commanders, though. That was from, was it Tom Pelissero? Was it his quote?
Yes. Speaking at the owners' meetings, basically, he was saying he was surveying what other teams, you know, are doing. So it's not necessarily a direct Commander source, but more of that kind of the league expects this to happen. Mm-hmm. And you know, a lot of smokescreen stuff, who knows, but he's saying that, you know, JJ McCarthy could be the Commanders' guy. And, you know, I've previously said that I think they're going to take Jaden Daniels. But also, to a bigger point, I don't think it's Drake May. That's kind of what I guess, more believe in. So I'm kind of taking a half of a victory lap on that, where if it comes to pass. But there seems to be some, like, momentum behind this in terms of maybe JJ McCarthy not necessarily the best prospect, but the best fit for a guy who comes from a Kyle Shanahan tree and the Commanders' new GM, Adam Peters. So, and funny enough, our good friend Ben Solak said his comparison, his NFL comp for J.J. McCarthy is Brock Purdy. So maybe there's something to that. And, you know, everyone likes to, I think, poke fun about the Mac Jones thing in, what was that, 2021?
That was 2021, yeah.
But everyone kind of made fun of that as like, that was ridiculous. That wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
I think it was closer to happening than obviously it didn't happen. But you also saw, like, we saw how, okay, it didn't happen. But then we saw how Kyle Shanahan hated Trey Lance and didn't want to play him. So, you know, maybe Kyle Shanahan really did want Mac Jones. And that's why a lot of people were saying that at the time. And then ownership or whoever else, the GM kind of, you know, made a different decision. I think people incorrectly assume that everyone within a team is at a given time pulling in the same direction. That is often not the case. It's also, it's not the case in any kind of industry, I feel like, or relationship necessarily. So yeah, we'll see what the Commanders do there at quarterback. I think it's safe to say you would be joining me in liking J.J. McCarthy ending up in either Washington or New York, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Sorry, there was an update on the DAC thing. This is how the sausage gets made around here, you know? That's just...
We're almost done. Just finish it out.
I know. Well, this is a kind of a big-time thing, and I
haven't... I can't just speak by myself, though.
I have an update for you. I really like the Commanders offseason, and at this point, there's not a quarterback they can take that's going to, you know, push me off of that. You know what I'm saying? Like, even if they took J.J. McCarthy at 2, I wouldn't feel like, oh, what a bunch of losers. Like, that's so stupid. They ruined this. You know what I mean? Like,
rank the quarterbacks you would most prefer them to take at number 2.
Jaden Daniels.
Most prefer them to take because you're like not threatened by them.
Jaden Daniels, J.J. McCarthy, Drake May.
Wow. Yeah, I think I'd have McCarthy number 1.
I'm willing to be wrong on the Jaden Daniels thing, but like his frame concerns me. You know what I'm saying? Like if I was that team, like, I'm not at all denying that he has a higher ceiling than someone like J.J. McCarthy, right. But I think McCarthy might have
the floor.
Right, exactly. And especially, it's not just like, oh, it's my first round quarterback. It's your number 2 overall quarterback. So that, you know, adds
it. So number 2 overall quarterback at a time where like this is the franchise reset. It's now. Like it's now or not that they can't recover from it, but it could be a long time until they recover. There was actually a very, I think, honest and sobering article on Hogs Haven recently that I read about, like, what are the fair expectations for a quarterback taken at number 2? And on historical context, even they were admitting, like, it's a bit much to expect this guy to be the franchise savior. Just based on history, you know, based on how the draft goes, how quarterbacks are evaluated and turn out to be and go to, you know, teams that aren't very good. Like, it's a lot to expect this guy to instantly be the savior. Now, again, that can happen. The ceiling is there. You can see what a C.J. Stroud does for an organization, for example, or Joe Burrow, and maybe the Commanders end up hitting on that guy. Obviously, Burrow a little less likely of a parallel because of being the number 1 overall pick and such a dominant prospect in his final year at LSU. But, yeah, I mean, that's ultimately what it comes down to. It's going to define their era, their next era of Commanders football. All this free agency stuff is great and whatnot. They're going to be a better team. They've raised their floor. Dan Quinn is an upgrade over your favorite coach, Ron Rivera. That's fine. Doesn't really matter if they can't get the quarterback right. They're not exactly scaring anyone with Marcus Mariota back there.
We've got to get out of here very soon. So a couple of quick hitting things now that we're done with the Commanders.
Enjoy songs too.
Exactly. My thanks to Brandon for carrying us a little bit. First, Ian Rappaport added an update to his tweet, which makes it worse. He quoted himself and said, this appears... So, like, I don't know if you agreed, but, like, the initial tweet seemed kind of hypothetical to me, or seemed like, kind of vague. And you know what I mean? Like, it could mean the deal's coming, it could mean it's not coming, whatever. The second one makes me want to vomit. He quoted himself and said, this appears to clear the path for Dak Prescott to test free agency in 2025.
Well, I mean, it's just common sense too, right? Because if the Cowboys were going to do a restructure in an aggressive way, they would have done it by now, because that was how you get the full benefit of doing that. There's no, what's the point of doing it later? That doesn't benefit you.
I agree. I mean,
and what's Dak's reason to do it at that point? Like, why is it? Dak is a fool, and I thought he was dumb last time to cave when he did. He ultimately made out relatively well, but he could have made out even better if he just waited a little bit longer to test the market. And so maybe he'll cave again, to the delight of Cowboys fans. But at this point, it just feels like there's no good reason to, because he enters free agency next year. And even if it's a deal that he gets from the Cowboys, it's going to be an awesome deal for him.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so that's that. Next thing, then we'll do songs. There was a report that the in-season Hard Knocks this year will be centered on a division, not a specific team, because it's kind of falling flat.
Come on. You know it's division to pick, so NFL.
If it is the NFC East, do we have to commit to like live shows or something, like live breakdowns after the episodes or something?
I think so. I think right? I think.
So I believe those air on Tuesdays. So
what's the point of this podcast if we don't do that?
Yeah. So if I'm right and they air Tuesdays and it's the NFC East, I think starting those weeks in the NFL season, we would push our show to being a live one for as long as the episodes run, like the 6 weeks or whatever.
They might be, we could do shorter episodes, depends on, yeah, what we're getting content wise, if it's actually any good. But yeah, I think we kind of have to.
Okay, let's do songs and get out of here. Rachelle got hers submitted very, very early because she is the best. And I'm pulling it up right now. She went with Dance the Night by Dua Lipa. And you added an exclamation emoji.
Yeah, I like a Dua Lipa. Dua Lipa. I can't say like I know all of her discography. I'm not like an expert or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But I like her. I like her music. So
boom. I'm going to go with a song that plays at a lot of San Antonio Spurs games. The Spurs who won without Wemby on Tuesday night.
okay. Who cares?
Well, I do, because I have to assign my sports energy somewhere right now. And it's definitely not the Cowboys. I'm going with Let's Get Loud by Jennifer Lopez.
Mm, wow. I'm going to break from theme of Latin artist to go with Taking Back Sunday's Great Romances of the 20th Century, specifically the demo version. Because the demo version has this spoken intro that I think is a great addition to the song. It is not on their actual album, so I'll find a way to send that to you.
Okay.
It is available on Spotify as well, so it's out there. It shouldn't be impossible to find. But it's such a long title that it's hard to see like demo version at the end. You know what I mean? Like you're not seeing like, it's not like a one song title and then you see demo after it. So you kind of have to like let it scroll to see the whole thing. So anyway, yeah, finally good to get some Taking Back Sunday representation on the playlist here. So I'm going to go with that song.
I hate everything and everyone and...
Our good friend Holden loves your misery, by the way.
This is my last thing, and then we can go. Him. I meant to ask you last week. I know it feeds him, and Holden runs whenever he has misery. He's not even, you know, doesn't have enough honor to face the fight. He does. That's okay. But so I think all Cowboys fans are curious. Is this enjoyable? Because what it feels like to me is when the Cowboys played the Eagles the second time and you were so like down, you were like, I'm not even like into this. Like the Eagles are going to lose and like they're going to fall apart. And obviously all that stuff happened. But so like, I would think that it would be like, maybe at first it was funny. And maybe like every time something happens, you're like, haha, that sucks for them. But I do think it probably sucks a little bit because it's taking some steam out of competition.
Holden did say he missed you on Monday Football Monday, so there is a positive compliment.
I live rent-free in Holden's mind. So,
but anyway, no, I'm good with it. I'm pretty cool with it. It's not like Spike the Football happy about it, like, let's go, because it's not really that kind of thing, because it's just they're doing nothing. So not like, yeah, I'm so fired up about the Cowboys doing nothing. It's more of just like, oh, that's like a relief. It's kind of just like, oh, good. They're not making a trade. There isn't some kind of big thing popping up now. Watch me jinx it here. I was actually looking at the Cowboys transactions because for some reason in my head, I thought they kind of like waited out the market a little bit and got Stephon Gilmore and Brandon Cooks like in April or later. That wasn't even true.
It was early. It was like the first week of free agency.
March 19th for Brandon Cooks. And then
Gilmore. And then it's like 2 days later.
Yeah. Gilmore. Yeah, it was actually right near the start of free agency. So, and then after that, you know what the Cowboys did after that? Like almost nothing. Like they re-signed Jonathan Hankins. And I'm looking at all of their other moves after that. And basically basically the whole rest of the summer, they did nothing. So just based on precedent, it's not like, well, don't worry, because we're going to make some moves later, like the Eagles do, and they traded for CJGJ like right before the season, or made some moves in training, like signed Zach Cunningham in training camp, whatever. Cowboys don't have a history of doing that.
They did sign Malik Hooker in training camp a couple years ago, and then they signed him to an extension last year during camp. they brought in Brett Maher, Kevontae Turpin, Anthony Barr. Like, they brought in a handful of dudes, but Alfred Morris once upon a time. But this is so dumb. I'm being serious. I was on Statsys. They are making me like football less. So
that's great. That's music to my ears. Speaking of songs,
let's leave in
a perfect ballad.
As we do, say whatever you want. I really don't care.
Whatever I want, I don't really care. It doesn't matter.